It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska on 100.1 FM. Where we have fair skies, 49 degrees, it certainly is a beautiful day. At the airport, they indicate they have southeast winds at 7 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. Look for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 49, south winds around 10. Rain is likely tomorrow and for Thursday, the first day of Crab Fest. However, look for partly sunny skies for Friday, mostly cloudy skies for Saturday, partly sunny skies on Sunday and Monday too. Coming up on the Midday Report, a North Slope representative has torpedoed the deal that would have advanced a pension plan in the legislature along with a gas tax scheme. And House lawmakers voted Saturday to partially repeal a mandatory sick leave law approved by Alaska voters less than 2 years ago.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. This is the busiest primary election day of the 2026 midterm so far. NPR's Domenico Montanaro is following races where voters across several time zones are deciding key contests up and down the ballot.
There's six states that are voting, from Pennsylvania to the south in Kentucky, Alabama, and Georgia, to out west in Oregon and Idaho. We're really heading into the heat of primary season here. The race I've got my closest eye on tonight is in Kentucky, a congressional race where Republican Thomas Massie is in a fight for his political life because of his high-profile disagreements with President Trump, especially and including wanting those Epstein files released.
NPR's Domenico Montanaro reporting. Acting Attorney General Todd Blanche went to Capitol Hill today in testimony before Senate lawmakers. He defended a nearly $1.8 billion fund created to compensate people affected by what President Trump calls the weaponization of the Justice Department under the Biden administration. Here's NPR's Ryan Lucas.
The Justice Department announced the nearly $1.8 billion fund as part of a settlement agreement with President Trump, who in return dropped his lawsuit against the IRS. The department says it will consider claims from people who were victims of weaponization and lawfare. Democratic senators slammed the settlement as a slush fund. Here's Washington Democrat Patty Murray.
This is corruption that has never been more blatant or more bright spent. What is happening is you write the check, Trump and his cronies cash it, American taxpayers, who are already being whacked with high prices, are going to foot the bill.
Blanche defended the arrangement and said Democrats and Republicans could submit claims. He also didn't rule out that January 6th Capitol rioters could be eligible to receive payments. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The three men killed in yesterday's attack on a mosque in San Diego are being remembered today as heroes for helping save worshipers as two young people opened fire. Imam Taha Hassan, the director of the Islamic Center of San Diego.
We are used to receiving hate mails, hate messages, people driving by and cursing and all that stuff. But such horrible crime, we have never expected this.
The FBI's special agent in charge, Mark Ramilly, described materials found in the vehicle where the 17 and 18-year-old suspected shooters were later found dead of apparently self-inflicted gunshot wounds.
Writings and various ideologies outlining religious and racial beliefs of how the world they envisioned should look. These subjects did not discriminate on who they hated.
He says authorities also carried out three search warrants at residences, two of which turned up large amounts of firearms. From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed a bill that would reinstate pensions for public employees late last night as the Alaska House failed to advance a tax cut for the Alaska LNG project. Lawmakers had hoped to make a deal. They'd pass a gas pipeline tax relief bill in exchange for the governor allowing the pension bill to pass into law. But the deal fell apart Monday night after lawmakers modified the bill in an effort to allow the North Slope Borough to negotiate its own tax agreement. Representative Robin Nayak-Freer, a Democrat and the only lawmaker from the North Slope, proposed the change.
I have to fight for my district, and I have to fight against... Everyone wants to pull the resources out of there to benefit the rest of Alaska. But you want to take away our property taxing rights.
But that was unacceptable to Dunleavy and pipeline developer Glen Farne, which said it would inject too much uncertainty into the $46 billion project and hurt its ability to get financing. The architect of the pension for gas line tax cuts deal, Anchorage Republican Representative Chuck Kopp, said the change effectively killed the bill.
The Kenai Borough gave up their Title 29 powers on a far expensive LNG export facility to make this work. North Slope Borough has not been willing to do that.
Last-ditch negotiations continued into late Monday night, but shortly after 10:30 p.m., Dunleavy's aides delivered a two-page letter saying the governor had vetoed the bill over numerous concerns, including its cost. Lawmakers likely don't have the votes to override a veto. The head of the Alaska AFL-CIO, union leader Joel Hall, says it's a missed opportunity.
We could be having more teachers stay. We could have correctional employees. We could also have a generational investment. And it appears to me that both of those things might have gone up in smoke today.
Lawmakers have very little time left to pass a gas pipeline tax bill, which Dunleavy says is necessary for the project to go forward. The deadline for the regular legislative session to end is tomorrow. House lawmakers voted on Saturday to partially repeal a mandatory sick leave law approved by Alaska voters less than 2 years ago. Legislators in the Alaska House of Representatives voted 22-18 to approve an amendment that would cancel the law's application for seasonal workers and workers employed by a business with 9 or fewer employees. The amendment was to House Bill 193, which would create a mandatory paid leave program for new parents starting in 2030. That bill was passed by the House on a 36-4 vote and had a hearing in the Senate Finance Committee on Monday afternoon. The Alaska Beacon reports that changes to the sick leave policy would take effect immediately if the bill is signed into law, although the bill still needs to pass the Senate before the end of a legislative session on Wednesday night to make it to the governor's desk. Anchorage police say they are in the final stages of their investigation into the death of Kelly Hunt, the 19-year-old Shaktulik student who disappeared in January on her way to college in Soldotna. Last month, Hunt's remains were found in a ravine in Spinard, the same Anchorage neighborhood where she had been staying with a friend. As reported by KNBA, Chief Sean Case says the medical examiner's preliminary report determined Hunt died from hypothermia and exposure with alcohol in her system.
There's no indication that there's any physical trauma. There's no indication that an assault has occurred. So most of those questions on whether or not there was a homicide, those questions have been answered through the medical examiner's process.
Case says Hunt was missing for more than 100 days, and due to prolonged exposure to the elements, he says it's nearly impossible to determine Hunt's exact time of death. Before closing out the investigation, Case says police will conduct follow-up interviews to learn more about the circumstances leading up to her death. Based on the outcome of those interviews, Case says the investigation could shift back towards a criminal case. But for now, there's no evidence of foul play.
The fact that we had a 19-year-old die of exposure, that's a tragic situation. And I would anticipate anyone who hears the story would think it's tragic and unfortunate and have a lot of emotion behind that. But the fact that somebody leaves a residence in the middle of the night to potentially go meet up with somebody, I'm not sure that decision in and of itself is suspicious.
Hunt was supposed to catch a bus from Anchorage to attend the Alaska Christian College in Soldotna. Her friends told police she left on the morning of January 7th to meet with someone to buy alcohol and had left her purse and suitcase behind. Case says the investigation was further complicated because her disappearance wasn't reported until 4 days later. But despite that, Case believes his police officers and detectives did a thorough job.
When you start 4 days behind when somebody goes missing, you're pretty limited in that immediate response. But we did the things we were supposed to do.
But advocates for missing and murdered Indigenous people, including Antonia Comack, questioned the police's handling of the case. She says investigators are drawing conclusions too soon without first questioning the people who last saw Hunt.
How are you going to make that determination before you speak to those people? Because the bottom line is she is not old enough to drink herself. Somebody furnished her alcohol and then she wound up dead. That should be a crime.
The Anchorage Police Department timed yesterday's report on the Kelly Hunt case with the launch of a new online dashboard that tracks missing persons in Anchorage and the department's homicide clearance rate. Case says the report confirms that Alaska Natives make up a disproportionate share of both missing persons and homicides, but says cases involving both Native and non-Native victims are solved at about the same rate. The Anchorage Assembly is considering reinstituting a Public Safety Advisory Commission that was allowed to sunset in 2024. The old commission was supposed to advise city leaders on a variety of public safety issues, but some argued the group didn't do much to involve the community in its discussions. Now, as Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the Assembly is set to vote on establishing a new commission aimed at bringing citizens and the city closer together when it comes to addressing public safety.
In 2023, Anchorage police were working to get body cameras on police officers after voters approved a tax levy to purchase the cameras the year before. Rich Kirtner, an attorney who works with the Alaska Black Caucus, says he wanted to get more information on how the process was going.
I attended a couple of meetings of the Public Safety Commission. But it was all the people who sat on that commission were basically retired law enforcement. And it didn't really do anything that I could see.
Officials say the commission's lack of consistent staffing and its failure to represent the city's broad perspectives resulted in it being phased out in January 2024. Over the course of that year, Anchorage police shot 8 people, 5 of whom died.
After these shootings, I think the public, there was some public outcry for some kind of public and civilian oversight of the police department. And that's where it all started.
Last year, Anchorage Assembly members held a series of meetings over 6 months with community stakeholders in an effort to reimagine the Public Safety Commission. Former Assembly member Felix Rivera was one of the main organizers. He says from the start, there was stark debate over how the commission would operate.
I think there are some folks who probably wish that we didn't do this ordinance at all and we didn't have a Public Safety Commission. And then there are other folks who wish that we went all the way, sort of full steam ahead, allowed for investigations, subpoenas, all that stuff.
Rivera says the final proposal is more of a middle ground approach. It establishes a commission made up of 9 community members who have experience interacting with law enforcement, are subject matter experts in relevant public safety fields, or work in mental or behavioral health treatment. There's also a restriction on the number of members who can be former Anchorage police, fire, emergency response, or Department of Law employees, limiting those types of commissioners to 3. In addition to advising city leaders, the commission would have the authority to review public safety policies, hold public hearings, receive public records, and request independent follow-up reviews of specific incidents once an initial investigation wraps up. Rivera says he wants the commission to work to foster community feedback.
I want this commission to go out and hear from the public and hear their concerns, their praises for public safety, and everything in between.
The Alaska Black Caucus was one of the organizations advocating for reinstating the commission. The goal, Kirtner says, is to build a better relationship between the public and the city's public safety agencies.
We want to put the public back in public safety, and not that we're making the decisions necessarily. necessarily, but we're advising and we're working with and we're oversight. We have oversight over what's going on in the city. And that way, I think that will develop the trust of the community.
But some residents think the new commission doesn't go far enough. Michael Patterson is part of the Party for Socialism and Liberation Anchorage. For years, the group has pushed for increased police transparency and accountability with the public, including advocating for body cameras on officers and working with the families of police shooting victims. He says the commission proposal is fundamentally flawed.
It's not civilian oversight. It is a backroom deal between the sponsors of this ordinance, Chief Case, and the APD, the Anchorage Police Department Employees Association. It's not what people have been asking for the last 6 years.
Patterson says the high number of police shootings in recent years and the lengthy process to get cameras on officers has led to mistrust of law enforcement in the community. He wants the assembly to pass an ordinance that gives the commission more oversight.
Supplement it with a ordinance that is going to actually give this body investigatory powers, the power to compel APD to cooperate investigations, and also to recommend disciplinary measures to the chief of police.
Kirtner says he understands the desire to expand the commission's powers, but he thinks the current proposal is a good jumping off point.
The language in the ordinance is broad enough. It can be very effective, whether you call it advisory or not. I think it can be really effective if you have the right people at the table, if they're all committed, and if they work together.
As assembly members work on finalizing the proposal, Rivera says he's hopeful that the commission can start working soon.
In perfect world, it would be great if by the fall, we have a fully staffed commission that's starting its work.
Assembly members are set to hear public testimony on the proposal to reestablish the Public Safety Commission at their meeting on May 26th, and they could vote on it the same day. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Breakup on the Kuskokwim River is closely monitored by a team of specialists, Riverwatch. But as KYUK's Samantha Watson reports from a Riverwatch flight, their work is made possible by a larger team of experts, the people who live along the Kuskokwim's banks.
Like any great mission, the Riverwatch flight has a slick four-part entourage. The team consists of a pilot,
K2 Aviation,
two state emergency management specialists,
that water's cold, let me tell you,
and a hydrologist.
There's a lot of full river width cracks.
Each morning, through the thaw and breakup of the Kuskokwim River, they pack in tightly to a small bush plane. From the air, the Riverwatch crew surveys the changes in the ice. That data informs official flood warnings and comprehensive reports. But outside of the tight team of four, the brains of the operation also lies in the many people who live along the river. Here's Riverwatch's Willis Walunga with the state.
The people that actually live in these communities, they have the eyes, they have the ears, they have the practical knowledge, the past knowledge, and nothing can replace this key part.
Also called ground truth, these perspectives provide firsthand reports and photos and the lived experience of the bigger picture.
At 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, once they hear something coming, they already know.
The Riverwatch plane lands in Aniak, one of several communities the team visits, sometimes daily, as breakup progresses down the river and out to the ocean. At the airport, the team asks to see the local flooding. Mike Stewart, the pilot, comes along, pulling himself onto the back of the lumber truck as it rumbles towards the north side of town.
We got lots of room on this flat.
Jana Drake works with the state emergency side of the operation. She hops out of the truck, examining the pool of water surrounding the AC grocery store.
I'm gonna go around, I think, try to get inside the store and just make sure they're all okay on the inside.
Christine Check-Snyder is the manager of Aniak's AC store. She shows Drake photos of the flooding that's entered her house next door.
Perfect. Can you send me that picture?
Sure, I've got a couple of them.
Yes.
This is what it looked like this morning.
We're talking about water damage, but you can hear a kind of lightness in Check-Snyder's voice.
Like I said, I got kayaks under the house. If I had to, I'll lash them together and we'll float down to Bethel and have Chinese food.
Drake says for communities along the Kuskokwim, a transformation is occurring. The winter world is literally splitting apart.
You have to live it to understand it. But an Alaska breakup means so many wonderful things. Backing to being able to gather and harvest and hunt.
The team catches a ride down to the riverbank, where water has pushed a tower of ice sheets 40 feet high onto the shore. For the first time all year, the river is flowing, carrying chunks of ice.
But if it was really quiet, like there was no engine noise, mm-hmm. The sound is amazing. It sounds like chandeliers clanging each other.
Flooding in Kuskokwim communities depends on a lot of factors. Surrounding the river is a plumbing system of sloughs and offshoots of the main channel. Their smaller thaws all have a role in where ice jams form and how flooding plays out. From the air, hydrologist Johns Ostman uses a digital map to orient and note where changes are happening. But unlike conventional maps that use mile markers, his is a network of local place names. That map then informs warnings and updates using the language of the people who live here. Sometimes that's literal, using the Yupik name for an ice jam point or a locally known landmark.
On the Kuskokwim, we're basing it by history and people. You know, it really is a lot of fish camps.
Sometimes those fish camps belonged to elders who have passed away. The structures aren't even there anymore. But the plots of land are still known for the people who kept them.
And I think everybody in the listening area will know where that is. And that's, it makes me, it gives me a connection to this place as well.
He said over his 5 years flying the Kuskokwim, he's still learning local place names, thanks to the generosity of the local experts who help keep Kuskokwim River communities safe. From a tiny plain above the Kuskokwim River, I'm Samantha Watson.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 19th day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose today at 5:38. It will set again at 10:35. That will give us 16 hours and 57 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 51 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 69 degrees, set in 2002, and our record low was 30, set in 2013. Currently it is 49 degrees here in Kodiak with fair skies. Mostly sunny skies are predicted for the rest of the day with a high near 49, south winds to 10. Look for increasing clouds overnight tonight with a low of 39. South winds to 10, turning to the northeast after midnight. Rain is likely on Wednesday, mainly before 10 a.m., followed by mostly cloudy skies and a high near 50, west winds to 10. For Thursday, the first day of Crab Festival, rain, high near 52, south winds to 15, gusting to 25. However, on Friday, they are predicting partly sunny skies with a high near 51. Look for mostly cloudy skies with some afternoon showers on Saturday. And on Sunday, they are calling for partly sunny skies with some showers. For Monday, partly sunny skies with just a chance of showers. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide here on the east side will happen at 5:25 this afternoon and be 7.1 feet. Followed by a low tide at 10:29 p.m. of 2.4 feet. And we have some very low tides happening. Our next morning low tide will happen at 11:38 tomorrow morning and be minus 1.7 feet. That's way on down there. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:40 this afternoon and be 12.6 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:14 of 3.6 feet. And your very low tide tomorrow will happen at noon, 12:05 p.m., and be minus 2.6 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, be aware we have a small craft advisory for today for Marmot Island, Usitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles, southwest 20, becoming southeast tonight, to 15, and then turning to the north after midnight. Look for 9-foot seas today on our east side, coming down to 6 feet tonight. For tomorrow, northwest 20 and 6-foot seas. For Wednesday night, southwest 25 and 8-foot seas. And for Thursday and Friday, southwest 25 with 11-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southwest 20 today, becoming northeast 15 tonight. 5-foot seas coming down to 3 feet tonight. For Wednesday, north 15, becoming southwest in the afternoon, seas at 3 feet. Thursday through Friday, southwest 20 and 6-foot seas in the Shelikof. Just outside of the city of Kodiak in Chiniak Bay, south winds to 15 knots today and 2-foot seas. For tonight, southeast 15, becoming northeast after midnight with 3-foot seas. And for tomorrow in Chiniak Bay, northwest 15, becoming west 10, seas at 2 feet. Wednesday night, south 20 and 3-foot seas. The following are upcoming meetings in the Kodiak Island Borough. Tomorrow, the Solid Waste Advisory Board will be having a work session. That will occur at 6 p.m. in the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center's conference room. Also tomorrow, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a regular meeting at the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. And on Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And just a reminder, all borough facilities and offices will be closed on Monday in observance of Memorial Day. The Airport Advisory Board will be holding a meeting on Wednesday. That meeting will start at 3:30 p.m. tomorrow in the city's conference room. You can call the Public Works Department for more information at 907-486-8060. This meeting is open to the public and will be web streamed. The link for that and meeting packet are available at the City of Kodiak's website. If you have any more questions, contact the City Clerk's Office at 907-486-8636. Also on Wednesday, the latest newborn feeding class is going to be held at the Kodiak Public Library. That will be Wednesday from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the library. Taught by an international board-certified lactation consultant, this free, in-person, jam-packed, interactive workshop is designed for all families expecting babies, and it's offered in collaboration with Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. Covers all topics relating to getting your newborn feeding journey started out right. If you have more questions or would like to register, go to kodiakkindness.org or call or text 907-539-2660. At the library, they are having the Writers Club tonight. That happens at 6 p.m. tonight. For those wanting to learn the process of writing and share ideas, it's for ages 16 and older. And the Escape Room returns this week. The theme is Wild Wild West. Solve puzzles and find the gold. It runs Tuesdays and Saturdays at 3 p.m. and Thursday evenings at 6:30 p.m. all summer long. So that's Tuesdays and Saturdays at 3 p.m., Thursday evenings at 6:30. It's for groups of 3 to 4. Sign up at Sign Up Genius at the library's homepage. And of course, tomorrow is the Teen Dungeons and Dragons Club, open to middle school and high school ages. That's 3 p.m. tomorrow at the library. And speaking of the library, the annual Crab Fest book sale is coming up here during Crab Festival. That will be happening Friday and Saturday, 10 to 4 on Friday, 10 to 4 on Saturday too. $5 a bag. You cannot beat that price. And it's in the historic barn, as well as the Kodiak Public Library, I believe. Also, the Crab Fest Blood Drive will be happening May 21st through 25th, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Kodiak Marketplace. Please hydrate and eat before you donate, and you can make an appointment. That makes it so much easier for them. Call Terra Cup at 907-942-7117. The KMXT Yearbook Project is going on. KMXT is turning 50 in 2026, and we're making a yearbook to celebrate. Please submit your photos and tell us your story of KMXT through the people who bring it to life. Whether you've been here for decades or just became a member, you belong in this book. Please send us landscape-style photos of you and your family, including everyone's names, and you can submit your photos to kmxt.org/yearbook. And please get them submitted by June 30th.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.